Chapter 6. Mission Time, 6144.27 Tango Zulu. Sublevel 1. Firebase Energy Complex. Lieutenant Commander Yili Curtis had heard all the commotion from the main section of the base. She was particularly interested in the data that had been exchanged between Captain Hunter's handheld and the first Ultimate Arsenal Stasis Pack. She hadn't been present during Mu and Hunter's examination of the contents of Facility 51, but she had gathered all the relevant readings from the command net, and she had invested roughly 25 minutes of concentrated effort in understanding what Skywatch intelligence had in mind for Mycenae SETI 6. Somewhere, an action team was in operation. This group represented implementation of an obscure article in the Classified Activities Protocol that gave field personnel wide discretion in matters of engagement, deployment, and use of semi-authorized weapons against undeclared enemies. An action team had authorization to supply and maintain all kinds of wonderful weapons technology for field units. There was no doubt they were responsible for everything stored in the ultimate arsenal. As Commander-in-Chief, the President had the authority to cease classified operations and order the deployed personnel to stand down, but technically his authority to launch such an operation was at the discretion of the ranking field agents and the supporting action team, whether they be regular Skywatch or from some other agency. The battle in Dome Blue was confirmation at least one and possibly several undeclared enemies were present on MSETI 6. Commander Curtis's monitors had recorded just about everything that had happened before, during, and after the fight. She paid particular attention to the fate of the Rollins Rock, since it was conclusive proof a second hostile faction was present. The precise nature and makeup of these factions was unknown, but what was clear couldn't be ignored. Whoever was out there gunning for the defenders of the Oka base was motivated, organized, and well-armed, possibly with weapons beyond human science or technology. Yili was certain of that last fact because she was currently tracking at least one intruder on the sub-level under the base's main reactor controls. She had descended the platform ladder at the north end of the roughly circular complex and was making her way around the reactor structure, sweeping for movement or life signs. OK was powered by a small, easily transported fusion plant, not much larger than Argent's capsule reactors. The reason for the emphasis on convenience was that marine fire bases were ostensibly mobile, meaning they were meant to be broken down, moved, and re-established in less than 4 hours. A mobile ground installation's first consideration was power. This was the key innovation that had driven development of the instantly deployable capsule reactor. Once the Marines have power in any given LZ, all other things become possible, including life support, heavy ground emplacements, shielding, electronic warfare, long-range communications, and so on. The firebase was supposed to take all that to the next level. The problem was, the personnel assigned generally didn't have the same attention to detail as the chief engineer of a battleship, for example. At the moment, one of the most important details was a message on Yili's handheld. Arsenal 2 activated, standing by to deploy. No one else on the captain's team had noticed, apparently, but all authorized field-grade officers had deployment of the arsenal weapons at their command. Yili presumed since higher ranks implied operational rather than tactical commands, coordinating and deploying what might be fairly formidable devices would be a duty SIC would consider appropriate. Since the commander was tracking an intruder that seemed to be rather taken with the idea of invading the firebase's power systems, this seemed to be a pretty good time to call in some reinforcements. There wasn't enough room on the sub-level for 12-foot diameter war robots, so Yili was hoping she could call in something a little more discreet. Commander Curtis deployed Arsenal 2 on her own authority. She had no idea just how perfect her timing actually was. Yili was renowned among Skywatch vessel crews for her insistence on carrying not one, but two sidearms. The jokes and nicknames had followed her since her first assignments as a commissioned officer. Her white hair, spooky personality, and her apparent preference for examining and working with devices, rather than engaging in polite banter with fellow crew members, made her seem standoffish, when in reality, Yili was just waiting for someone to say something meaningful. She found a home with the Jacks for two reasons. One, Jason Hunter and his chosen pilots were each extraordinary in their own way, and two, the other members of the Bandit Jacks actually listened occasionally. Most other fleet or Marines had their mouths running at all times, pausing only briefly to inhale. Yili was different. She spoke only occasionally. Mostly she was ignored, politely or otherwise, because people couldn't get past her quirks long enough to realize at any given moment she had a magnificent grasp of the technical realities facing her team. She didn't voice them conventionally, but that didn't make her wrong. The captain himself had opined at length about how, even when lives were at risk, most people were primarily concerned about the placement of the salad fork and where you bought your shirt. Yili's competence also didn't stop her fellow crew members from calling her quick draw and gun collector. The commander didn't pay much attention to the naysayers. She had ditched two fighters in her career as a combat pilot. At least one of those incidents put her on the deck and injured only a half mile from heavily armed enemy units during the First Praetorian War. Then there was the incident in the downed Copernicus on Bayonne 3. A younger and less experienced Lieutenant Curtis made the decision not long after her first brush with unplanned hostilities to make sure she wasn't just a fighter pilot, but an armed fighter pilot. The habit stuck. And now it was expressed in the form of two heavily modified TK-12 specials, one holstered on each leg. Her other weapon on this occasion was Arsenal 2. At her command, it had apparently deployed, but Yili could not figure out where it was or what it was supposedly doing. The commander continued her advance around the circular outer section of the sublevel. Every 20 yards or so, there was a standard universal interface console. Each was meant to be manned by a different technician in the event some kind of coordinated test or operation was underway. At the moment, they were all unmanned and set on standby. The sublevel itself was only minimally illuminated. The facility wasn't meant to be utilized very often. Yili had decided not to make use of her torch. Unnecessary moving light would only provide an early warning to intruders. Argent's chief engineer consulted her ATMAS again. There were inexplicable atmospheric readings around the reactor, but nothing that signaled the presence of life. She moved another 15 feet towards the west end of the circular outer passage and slipped into the shadows. Standing at one of the universal interface consoles was a human dressed in a standard set of maintenance utilities. He was wearing a cap and had at least one visible weapon on a belt around his waist. He was working rather casually. Yili watched him carefully, hoping to determine exactly what he was doing. He had no light with him. Like Curtis, he was relying on the illumination being provided by the console itself and the scattered safety lights at various locations along the high edge of the sublevel's outer wall. Yili glimpsed movement above the man. She squinted, trying to see what could be going on in the conduits and lattice structure that formed the jungle-like metal ceiling over the platform. There was no noise at all, and no visible light. A moment later, what looked very much like a tendril of some kind silently descended from the pipes and electronic components just above the universal interface. It lowered towards the man like someone was extending a rope from above. The tendril itself was pitch black in color and looked as if it might be made of some kind of animated carbon composite. Yili got the impression by watching it, the object was moving on its own somehow. An instant after it reached some 7 or 8 feet from the overhead gantry towards the console, it slithered around the man's neck. There was a sudden struggle before the man was effortlessly hoisted into the darkness. Not a sound was heard. The commander was rather concerned. Whoever the intruder was, he didn't have a chance. Yili could only hope, at least for the moment, whatever had just neutralized him had chosen her side. Just to be safe, Yili drew one of her TK-12s. She remained crouched, hidden behind an auxiliary coolant tank only about 10 yards from the intruder's console. Before she had conceived a plan to advance and examine whatever damage had been done, the filament appeared right over her head. The commander froze. There was no point in opening fire on it. Whatever it was, there was every reason to believe it had considerable ability to avoid weapons fire. Before Yili could retreat, the filament reached for her atmas. She watched, fascinated, as the end of the tendril typed a message on the device. "Help me find the other two."